Blog Talk Radio.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
You're listening to Inside the Park. Inside the park. The RSV family. My usual suspects with me. Hot baseball topic. We're just gonna jump right into it. I always tell them.
Gambling.
What do
you think about gambling?
It's
not gambling when you know you're
gonna
win.
He's not coming out late. The RSV family. You're listening to Inside the Park. Inside the park. Welcome back. You're listening to another week of Inside the Park. This is the playoff edition. We're real excited. Lots going on. Lots been going on in these playoffs, so we got to jump into. First, let's check in with Mike. Mike, how you feeling after that tough loss today, brother?
Depressed. It just takes one. It doesn't matter if you win it in three or five. You just got to win three, all right? So what we're doing now is we're just building character for the entire team to move forward on in the divisional series.
I hear you, man. A lot's going on, and I got to tell you, man, I need those Reds to come through for me. I may or may not have put a little small wager on them to win that series, so I need them to come through. let's first jump into this wild card. These wild card games that just took place, Major League Baseball instituted a new wild card format. The two top teams who don't win their division get into the wild card. We saw it play out for the first time this year. Mike, were you a fan of the wild card?
Absolutely. I think it kept a lot of teams interested. Not necessarily in the American League. I think that was such a tight race, but the National League, without a doubt, have some teams in it. So, yeah, I'm a fan of it.
Okay. How about you, Hank? Are you a fan of that extra wild card?
I am now. You see how I slid in just under the tag tonight? I am. I am. You're absolutely right. It made for an exciting end all the way down to the end. And you've seen some teams relax, also known as the Texas Rangers. Thought they had it wrapped up and that made for some great theater down there at the end of the stretch there.
Yeah, indeed. That ballpark in Oakland was rocking when they were playing the Rangers. But how many of you guys caught the Braves St. Louis game? And if not caught it, Mike, did you see what transpired after that very liberal use of the infield fly rule?
I did, and I think what you take away from that is that the fan reaction was horrible, just horrible. It was embarrassing to see. Was it a great call? No, but the Braves played a bad game. What, three errors in that game? So they didn't deserve to win it, and it just wasn't nice to see.
Yeah, I set it up for the listeners who weren't privy to watching the game. Basically, there was a runner on first and second for the Braves. They were down by, three runs, I think, runner on first and second. And batter came up, Simmons, I believe, and hit a fly ball to the, shall we say, outfield. It was about 75 feet into the outfield. The umpire called the infield fly rule about 2 seconds before the ball landed. Typically, an infield fly rule is supposed to be called it while the ball is in the air. Pretty sudden. But umpire waited to call it. The ball was not, in fact, in the infield, but actually 75 feet into the outfield. Braves fans were pretty pissed, to say the least, and they started throwing beer bottles onto the field and held the game up for a good 10, 15 minutes. Hank, did you agree with the infield fly call?
No, I didn't. And I was actually watching that game, and that to me was a brutal, brutal call. And, you know, all of the baseball experts said that it was the right call. And the reason why they said it was the right call, they said because the infielder actually had gotten control of himself to get underneath the ball, and that's why they waited for him to get control of himself, and then that's why they called it the infield fly. But the infield fly rule is to protect the runners. I don't see how this protected the runners in this case simply because of how far out in the outfield. You're absolutely right, RJ. He was a good 35, 40 feet. In fact, the left fielder had called him off and then stopped because I guess the umpire had called the infield fly and the ball dropped. That, to me, is confusing. Baseball needs to really take a very good look at that because, again, that was a brutal, brutal call. It didn't cost the Braves the game because if you recall the rest of that inning, the bases were loaded. Michael Bourne was up with an opportunity to do something and struck out swinging. So they still had an opportunity to do something. So, but the fan reaction was awful, but that's a brutal call. Just how far he was out in the outfield, I've never seen that before. They showed some examples of it, but that still, to me, is a brutal call at that particular time.
Yeah, you know, I got to say, I wasn't that turned off by the fan reaction. I used to live in Atlanta, and those fans a lot of times get a bad rap for not supporting their teams. There'd be Braves playoff games that wouldn't sell out. And sometimes as a fan, I mean, you want to voice your opinion. I know had I been at that Tigers game when Galarraga lost that no-hitter, I may have been compelled to throw something on the field after that Jim Joyce call at first. So you never want to see it. You don't want to see anybody get hurt. But I wasn't put off by it. I'll say that.
Well, you know, I was kind of thrown at how they just would not let up. I mean, the game was still in doubt. You know, I mean, yes, it was a brutal call. But the thing is that even as a fan, you know, there was still a lot of inning left. Okay, there was still a lot of inning left. I would have been more understanding, I guess, of the call had it happened and they got out the inning without an opportunity. But given how the whole inning, you know, shook down, the Braves still had very much an opportunity. You know, the Braves were their own worst enemy in that whole game, and they were their own worst enemy in that inning. They still had the bases loaded with two outs. That's where they would have been in the first place. The shortstop caught the ball. They would still been right there. The fact that they didn't contribute, you know, they didn't produce, you know, that call didn't have nothing to do with it in the long run.
Mike hit the nail on the head. You know, you got a one-game playoff, which, you know, when in a sense is kind of like a coin flip is the way I see it as to who wins. But, you know, the Braves have played stellar defense all year, and they came out and made three errors, like Mike said.
Right.
When you make three errors in a playoff game, you're fighting an uphill battle.
Right, right.
So, yeah. Yeah, it was a tough call, but we can't say it cost them the game. Atlanta kind of shot themselves in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into a guy, a one single player who may have shot himself in the foot, and that's Josh Hamilton. In that other wild card game between Baltimore and Texas, Josh Hamilton just had a rough go, man. He 0-for-5 in that game. We talked about the series in Oakland that led to Texas being a wild card team. Josh Hamilton just wasn't right. That last game to decide who was going to win the AL West, he's dropping fly balls and striking out. Rough week for Josh Hamilton. Do you think his days in Texas are over, Hank?
I do, but let's look at the Texas Rangers in general. Okay, monumental collapse here of a team that went to the World Series 2 years in a row, a team that, you know, we thought was going to win 100 games going away. There was a lot that was wrong with the Texas Rangers. I think there is going to be some dissension in the ranks we haven't heard yet between Ron Washington and the front office there And then you have Josh Hamilton. They've gone back and forth with the drama that's been Josh Hamilton this year and even last year. You know, I think that Nolan Ryan and that front office team has about had enough with him. Granted, he's a very, very, very talented player, MVP caliber player. But I think his days in Texas are numbered. I think they've gone as far with him as they can. I could see him in Detroit, quite honestly, because I think Mr. Ilitch will spend the money, even at $100 million. You look at an outfield with Austin Jackson, with a Josh Hamilton on that one side, along with Victor Martinez, Prince, and Cabrera. I could see that happening. I was thinking about that today. He would be with the Tigers not really caring that much about payroll anymore. I could see them doing something like that. But again, if you ask about Texas, I think his days in Texas are over.
Yeah, you know, some reports came out today. I don't know if you guys saw them. One, Texas came out and said that they were not going to negotiate with him prior to the free agency period. You know, Josh Hamilton has always said Texas will have the first crack at him, and Texas is kind of saying, you know, we'll wait and see how this plays out and what the numbers are looking like. And then Nolan Ryan came out today and kind of took not a shot at Hamilton, but he said he felt like Josh may have brought some of this undoing on himself by stopping the use of chewing tobacco in the middle of the season rather than the off season. I don't know if you guys recall, but Josh was going through a bit of a slump. There were rumors about marital issues. And then Josh came out midseason and said, hey, you know, I quit using chewing tobacco, and that's what's going on. I guess he's having a bit of the shakes. And so Nolan Ryan today said, you know, if you're going to do something like that, maybe you should wait till the off season and do that. So I think the writing's on the wall. Mike, do you see Josh Hamilton donning a Texas uniform next year?
Nope, not unless it's one of those veteran days where they call back the old Rangers and play an old-timers game. Now he's gone. He doesn't fit the person out of that organization, especially with Nolan Ryan at the top of it. So, and if you think about it, if you're going to spend $20 million, you could probably be a little bit better where you spend it on than Josh Hamilton at this point if you're Texas, especially because that team has offense. You know, they're not a one-trick pony. But like Hank says, I do see him getting a $100 million contract somewhere else. Someone's going to pay him for those numbers and think, you know what, we can deal with it here. It'll be all right. But I don't see how he goes back to Texas.
Gosh, I would like to think that front offices are a little smarter these days. You know, I may even be willing to give him a two-year deal with a little more per year than just locking him up $520. That seems very risky.
But, Mike, I mean, RJ, you have to understand, too, though, you know, he is a bat for hire, you know, and these days, and what we've talked about all year long about these contracts that these players are signing and what these owners are willing to sign for them, you can't take nothing away from a player of Josh Hamilton's caliber on the field. Now, yeah, he's flighty. You have to look at some of these teams now that has dealt with some of these flighty type of ball players. They kind of go in and out with off-season issues and then come back and are able to produce. That's why I said a team like Detroit, they're dealing with Adelman Young. We talked about that. They dealt with Cabrera a couple of years ago with his alcohol problem. Now he wins a triple crown. You know, for some of these owners, you know, money is not an option. You're looking at an opportunity to get back to the playoffs next year. You're gonna spend the cash on a Josh Hamilton, and you're going to roll a dice with all that other stuff because he just flat-out produces on the field.
Yeah, well, he's not hurt or hasn't OD'd on caffeine. I mean, it's just too many variables for me. I hope the Tigers do not make that plunge.
I hear you, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't know, man.
No, hey, I got to hand it to both you guys. I had questions previous to this show about your ability to walk and talk and chew gum at the same time. But, man, there's a Tigers game on, and you guys are still coming up with good stuff on the radio show. That's amazing. Hopefully no one's got this DVR because I feel scores slipping out of my mouth now.
No spoiler alerts here. I got the TV on mute.
All right. Look, now you know Mike is a little bit for Clip tonight. Now RJ, you know he thought he came in here, he thought he was gonna come in, you know, boasting and bragging about the Reds just dominating the Giants, and lo and behold, here comes Game 5. So you know he's gonna give us a hard way to go, and don't be surprised if he doesn't have an old English D sitting over there with voodoo needles all in him. So don't let that bother you.
I'm cool with it. I'm cool with it.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about it earlier. Mike and I are kindred spirits on the Cincinnati Red Sox.
We both are emotionally invested in the series, I think.
Indeed. And perfect segue, Hank. Thanks. Let's jump into that series. We touched on these wild card games. But let's get on into the guys that are playing now. You know, before the show started, before today actually, I was prepared to ask Mike, was Cincinnati the best team in the National League? Now, Mike, I got to ask you, can the Reds do it without Cueto? It looks like he's going to be out. Johnny Cueto, their Cy Young candidate, hurt his oblique, and they had to take him off the series roster, which means he also won't be able to play in the NLCS. So where does that leave us, Mike? Can the Reds compete without Cueto?
You know, I think they can, and this team has shown throughout the year that they're not built on one or two players. Missing Joey Votto for 45 games in the middle of the season, and really that being the time they played their best baseball. Homer Bailey's effort last night just shows his maturation. Of becoming a true, I think, a number two, if not borderline number one pitcher. If he can do that more and more consistently, then the Reds will really have something. But they've got depth within their pitching staff, so I'm not really overly concerned about that. And, you know, are they the best team in the National League? God, those teams are all neck and neck right now. On paper, you think, you know, the Cardinals have a nice lineup, but it's against my DNA to say that. So I would say if the Reds can win this game against the Giants, I think they're favored in the next series with or without Cueto.
Okay. What about you, Hank?
You know what? I think the Reds showed a lot of what they have.
I said, what about you, Hank? Because I'm over here worried. I need to know what the hell's going on with these Reds.
Well, here's the thing about the Reds. I think that, you first of all, your concern should be, you know, what the Cardinals are going to do. They're the wild card, really, in every sense of the word, because they don't have any fear when they get to this time of the year. And when you look at Cincinnati and you look at Washington, all right, this is the first time for both of these teams. I think that when you look at the Reds and you look at that pitching staff, and again, when you look at the back end of that pitching staff, you know, the Aroldis Chapman and that bullpen, that's enough to get them through. Now, see, Leto's had a few good innings in that first game after Cueto went out. Okay, he did a nice job there. He really hasn't pitched yet. Now, and quite frankly, you know, you had Bronson Arroyo all of a sudden, you know, turn into, you know, a Cy Young type of pitcher in that second game, only giving up one hit in like seven innings. So I think you got enough to get through five or six innings with the teams that's left. And then get to your bullpen, and they'll be fine. They have to score. You know, the same thing we talk about the Tigers. They have to be able to score. I don't know what happened yesterday, and I don't know what happened today, but why all of a sudden they go home and then they lost their bats. But, again, I think that if you can figure out – if Washington can figure out a way to get past St. Louis, who would be the team I would be concerned with, I think, yeah, Cincinnati, then I would take Cincinnati over Washington.
All right. Mike, you're the Cincinnati expert here. Tomorrow's matchup, Game 5, win or go home, you got Kane and Latos. You see the Reds beating Matt Kane again?
You know what I look at in this series is that the Giants starters, I don't think they've made it five innings. Oh, no, well, let's see, who pitched? So Vogelsong made it five, right? He came out after the fifth. But he's gone the furthest of any starter in this series. The starters have have been fortunate, I think is a good way to put it. The Reds had eight guys on base, left on base in the first four innings. The Reds left a number of runs on the field yesterday in the game there. Matt Kamen's getting the ball up in game one, and they took advantage of him. So I like the Reds' chances. I like the fact that they're at home, and then you're going to have a jammed ballpark here ready to go. I like the fact that it's Great American Ballpark, and, you know, that kind of evens things out. So I think we saw today with leak pitching that if you get the ball up, you can score a lot of runs. So it'll either be destined to happen or not. The Reds will hit or they won't. But I think Latos is a big-game pitcher, and I like their chances.
Okay, and my follow-up question for you. At what point did the Reds sign Randy Johnson and put him in a Homer Bailey jersey?
You know what? First of all, Homer Bailey is a little bit Randy Johnson. But he was their number one pick in 2005, okay, coming out of Texas high school kid. Always had a ton of talent. A lot of arm injuries, some shoulder injuries, some fatigue. This was by far his biggest innings pitched as far as his season totals go, and he's just gotten more confidence and more mature. And so he's always had the stuff. He's one of those guys, and I know the Tigers have had a couple of these. I always think of a Kyle Loesch as well, the guy who bounced around between Minnesota, St. Louis, before he really found his groove in St. Louis. But you know, he's got talent. He's always had talent. I think what he's done here is lined himself up for a very nice contract after this season, and then, you know, if not then, when he's a free agent after next.
Yeah, I got to say, I'm impressed with his stuff. I've been familiar with Homer Bailey for a while. I think, if I remember correctly, early in his career, he had a problem giving up the long ball as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he only had two pitches coming up. He had a fastball, and he had a 12-6 curveball. I mean, it was beautiful to watch, but he couldn't throw it for a strike. So once people laid off that, he was in trouble.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to see him coming around. And God, I hope they can pull out this game five.
No, it's nuts. Their pitching staff, nobody went on the DL the entire year. They had one skipped start, and that was with Cueto. Because of a blister somewhere around the middle of the year. That's it. And then you get to the postseason, and eight pitches into your first start in the postseason, you're done. I mean, just amazing.
Yeah, indeed. Now, let's stay National League for a second, fellas. This Cardinals-Nationals series, coming into it, you had the Nationals who throughout the season had the best arguably the best pitching and defense in the National League, going against St. Louis, who has some flat-out mashers, guys that can really hit the ball. You know, Beltran, Holiday, you got Alan Craig, you got David Freese. I mean, these guys mash. So you had the perfect setup. You had a team that hits the cover off the ball versus a team who's going to slash some leather and play and do some pitching. Unfortunately, it looks like the Nationals forgot to show up for this one. And I'm sure as Tigers fans, Hank and I despise the Cardinals. We know Mike has a sincere disdain for the Cardinals. Are we ready to bury the Nationals, though, Mike?
You know, I don't think so. The one thing I've learned about St. Louis this year is that they're maddeningly inconsistent, okay? They're very talented on paper. They've got, you know, playoff experience. But this is a team that struggled to get 10 games over 500 and stay there at any point in the season, at any point. So they're definitely a flawed baseball club. They've got they hit really well. They don't hit very well in the clutch. They lose a lot of tight ball games. And so if you really think about it, the way this series set up, home and away, they've really just held serve at this point. The series should be 2-1. St. Louis Nationals have two games coming up, and hopefully they can win them both. But I think we all agree that if a certain pitcher was throwing for Washington the other night, it may not be 2-1. It may be the other way, 2-1.
Yeah. as we've discussed, you know, the Nationals are holding Steven Strasburg out, trying to preserve his arm for some other year down the line when maybe they're not in the playoffs. But, you know, I'm almost ready to bury the Nationals, unfortunately. Today I was reading, I guess Ken Rosenthal had some quotes from an unnamed player who was pretty upset that Strasburg wasn't playing. They felt that they would be up 2-0 if Strasburg had to pitch that game too instead of Zimmerman. And when you start reading stuff like that and players are focused on who's not there, I think you're almost halfway defeated as it is. So I definitely see that they have an uphill battle to climb. And, gosh, I hope if the Cardinals do it, they lose in the next round. What about you, Hank? Are you ready to bury the Nationals?
This is what I have been concerned about the entire time, the psyche of this young team coming into their first playoffs and not coming in whole. And if they had to face any sort of adversity in this first round, what would happen? And this is basically what I was concerned about when I said shutting this young man down when they're going to need him, you know, may have an impact on this team, and now it is. You're going against one team that you cannot ever underestimate the heart of a champion. The only thing that the Cardinals wanted to do was get back into the playoffs, and now you see what they're made of. All of a sudden, they had a shaky first game, and then they come out and they beat the daylights out the Nationals game, too. Beltran hits two home runs. Jay makes an incredible catch out in the outfield, and now here they go. Yeah, I'm with you. I think that what happens is that any more adversity, this team needs a spark in the next game. If they don't get it, it's over. It's done. And there's going to be questions all off season about the decision about holding Strasburg out of their first playoff appearance in decades, in years.
That's right. And kudos to the Inside the Park team. I think we all brought that up last week when we talked about the Nationals. They may have some trouble. So, yeah, hats off to the fellas. I think we all saw that one before it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you guys got anything else for this National League Series, St. Louis and Washington, other than go Nationals?
I will say this, that this has been the craziest thing I've ever seen. I pretty much thought that the Reds with world beaters. I don't know how in the world. I was prepared to come on this show and say, how can you almost get no hit if you're the Giants in two games? I thought it was done. When I looked up at the game the other day, they had one hit, and ended up winning that ball game. That's how crazy this playoffs has been. Now, all of a sudden, you got the Reds, you know, hanging on by their fingernails. And quite frankly, I hope they do win because the Giants, right now, their offense, and I thought their offense was going to struggle without Melky Cabrera. And I don't think that they really match up well with either the Nationals or the Cardinals.
You know, I'm glad you brought up Melky. Isn't his suspension technically over? Didn't he have to sit out four games of the playoffs?
Well, they decided that he was not going to come back. They made that
right
decision, which I don't know what genius decided to do that, given how they've been hitting, save the game today. But he decided that he wasn't going to come back, and they decided they weren't going to bring him back. So, yeah, he
right
could technically come back. But
yeah, game five would be the game he'd be able to play in, right?
Right.
Yep.
Boy, would that have been interesting.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
You know what, and I don't have much faith in the Giants' bat. Watching that lineup up and down, I think they came in and they faced a pitcher who was not prepared to throw today, was not throwing at the level of the other guys on that Reds rotation. He got a ton of balls up today. And when Angel Pagan and Blanco are hitting balls out for you, you know you're living right. I think Latos goes in there, and the Giants are going to get 2-3 runs. And so that's the thing. If you score four runs, you get to go to the next series. If you don't, you didn't deserve it in the first place.
Right.
All right. So where are you tomorrow at 1 o'clock, Mike?
I think I'm going to duck into a bar somewhere downtown Chicago and have an extended business meeting.
We've all been there, man.
All
right. Before we go into the American League, a bit of news on a squad that's not in the playoffs. Cleveland Indians went out, locked up their guy nice and early. You know, whenever you fire a manager, it's great if you have some candidates in mind rather than just firing a guy and then hoping and praying you can get your guy. Francona, are you a fan of the move, Hank?
I was hoping he's going to be in Detroit, to be honest with you. Cleveland got a good manager who knows how to manage talent, which he proved in Boston. But if he doesn't have talent, then he's just any other manager, which he proved when he was in Philadelphia. So the question you have to ask yourself is what kind of talent right now is on the Cleveland Indians? You know, we can go back to my Hall of Fame shortstop, Asdrubal Cabrera. We can go with Kipnis, then you can go with Santana. Then you have to really see who else you have on that team. I think it's a good move if they get some talent over there, but if not, it's going to be just another Philadelphia Philly situation when he was there.
Okay, Mike, you see Cleveland contending in, say, the next 3 years with Francona at the helm?
Yeah, I think they can. And I just look at that division, and obviously Detroit underperformed this year. But if you compared their talent to the White Sox talent, I don't think you'd say that they're that far off from the White Sox. They can put up a year like that, especially with the second wild card that's out there right now. I think that opens the door for a lot of teams and says, yeah, they're a player or two away. I mean, look at it. Oakland and Baltimore made the playoffs. How can Cleveland be far away?
Yeah, you know, I got to say, coming into the season, you know, listening to Hank talk about Asdrubal Cabrera, I was a little concerned with the Indians. But I could definitely see Francona making a winner of these guys. I mean, like you said, Baltimore has done it. It's not going to take long with some of the pieces they've got. I like Cabrera as well. I like Kipnis. I like Santana. They're definitely the future looks bright, I'll say that. All right, so American League playoffs. Let's start with Detroit and Oakland. Detroit took an early 2-0 lead with their two home games. And then following those two home games, you heard a lot about the Oakland ball players complaining. Hey, we had the better record. Hey, we got home field advantage, three home games. But, you know, it's really unfair that we had to play two first on the road. This 2-3 format, Hank, what are your thoughts on it? Do you think it's unfair, it provides an unfair advantage to the underdog? Where do you sit on it?
You know what, it is unfair. I've never liked it, even though the Tigers have benefited from it this year, but I remember a time when they didn't benefit from it and they had the best record in the league. RJ, you remember in 87 when the Tigers had to fight the Blue Jays all the way to the end and they won the division. And then had the best record in the American League, but then had to go on the road and play the Minnesota Twins, who at that time won 88 games, same as the Tigers did. And then in the Metrodome, took a two-game lead, came back to Detroit, won one or two games, and won the division, went to the World Series. I can understand what the A's are talking about. You battled the Rangers all year long, you win a division, and then you're rewarded with having to go on the road. That's not fair. Baseball is the only sport that does that, does not reward the team with the best record with the home field where they start on the road. I don't understand why it can't be a 2-3 format or a 2-2-1 format. You know, that to me is fair, you know, and so that both teams get a home game, but that the home team starts the series at home. That's the whole idea of doing this. I'm not in favor of it, even though we benefited from it this year.
You know, let me jump in. I don't have a big issue with it. Baseball, out of the three major sports, is the one sport that has the smallest home field advantage. In football, home field advantage is huge. Basketball, it's a big deal as well. Baseball, not so much. And, you know, far be it for me. I mean, you got Justin Verlander throwing the first game with the Tigers. On the road, at home, Oakland's not going to be favored, regardless. The second game, I think the Tigers would have been favored as well. I don't think that Oakland really is I think the Tigers are a better playoff team than Oakland, regardless of where they play. And, I mean, granted, we're just talking about this Tigers-Oakland series, but if you look at all the other series, Cincinnati, they were a favorite team. They won two on the road. I mean, Oakland, if you're better, beat them. I mean, it's as simple as that. All this crying about we should have been at home first, if you're better, beat them. It's not that big a deal to me, home field advantage, especially in baseball.
Well, here's where I would disagree with you, RJ, because, see, let's just – when you look at it, especially when you're talking about October baseball, you're talking about climate change, number one. You're talking about park just the way the park configurations, okay? Now, maybe in the Oakland-Detroit series because you got two big ballparks, but let's just say for the sake of argument, you're talking about, like, in Cincinnati, the little bandbox they got there, okay, and then the big ballpark you have in San Francisco. That makes a big difference on how you set up your pitching rotation. If you're starting at home, you know who you can start at home based upon that. That's why I feel like in baseball, you know, it does make a little bit of a difference because outside of the 60 feet 6 inches and the, you know, 90 feet to each base, you do have those configurations out in the outfield, which will definitely depend upon how you set up your pitching.
Mike, whose side are you on here?
I'm on the winning side, RJ. You know, I think everybody, I get your point that baseball has the least statistical home field advantage, but there's something about starting the playoffs at home and finishing them at home that I think the home team earns. And whether that's park preference, whether that's climate, whether that's just batting second, I think those teams have earned that right. Did it play a big factor this year? No, not necessarily, but I think there's a mental advantage to starting at home and finishing at home, and that's what we're used to seeing. So I think you'll see that change next year.
Yeah, no, it'll definitely be changed. The reason they did the 2-3 this year was because the second wild card wasn't supposed to come into play until next year. But Bud Selig saw the dollar sign and said, oh, we got to do it this year. And they had already sold the contract to Fox and whomever else is doing the championship series, so that it would start Saturday and Sunday. So there wasn't room, enough travel days in there to go to a 2-2-1 format. So that's why we got this 2-3 format. But, you know, it strikes me as funny is that Oakland went down 0-2, hence they complained. Washington, who was favored and started on the road, they split, no complaints. The Reds started on the road. They were favored. They won both games, didn't complain. You didn't hear anything from the Yankees, who split. It's just Oakland, who went 0-2. They have this enormous problem with it. It just struck me as a little bit of, you know, win your game if you got a big problem with it. Win the game.
True.
Yep.
So there it is. Baltimore and the Yankees. I hate to do this, but it is a topic that probably should be discussed. After two games, the New York media has reared their ugly head, and they're wondering why Joe Girardi is batting A-Rod in the three hole. Agree or disagree, or is this much ado about nothing? Let's start with you, Mike, on this A-Rod in the three-hole.
I think when it comes down to a divisional series best of five, you got to make whatever changes that you need to make to get to the next series. And when you got a guy like A-Rod who is batting 083 in the playoffs right now, you drop him in the lineup. You just need to do that. And it's not like they don't have eight other guys that you'd consider for that position on another team, because they do. I think you need to earn that in New York and in the playoffs. You know, I have the same concerns about Joey Votto hitting three for the Reds now, who has absolutely no power since he came back with that knee injury. Thinking, man, maybe he's a two hitter now. He's not your three hitter because he's not driving the ball. So I got no issue with them moving him down the lineup. And really, if you go down, 2-1 to the Orioles here, which they're three outs away from doing, why would you not turn that stone over? Why would you not try something different?
Oh, Mike. Let me jump in here. I agree with you on Votto. Like you said, he has shown over a period of time that his knee has sapped him of his power. You know, even the Tim Lincecum argument, we've seen over the season, Lincecum, who's been moved to the bullpen, he's not starting for the Giants. We've seen over the course of the season that he can't get it done. We're talking about two games for A-Rod. Granted, if I was the manager, I probably would have had Cano batting third, but that probably would have been throughout the whole season. But to get upset after two games of not producing, it seems a bit of a reach to me. Small sample size, the most minute of sample sizes, and a little bit of let's pick on the kid we don't like.
Right.
Do you see that at all?
Doesn't he have a track record of this? I mean, I know they won it in, what was it, 07, 08? But he's got 7 strikeouts and 13 at-bats. He's struggling. You know, why not protect him in that order a little bit? You got to drive in some runs. What's the big deal? Why is it a big deal to move a number 3 hitter to number 5? Why is that a big deal? Does their check get less? Do they get less play after the game? Does Minka Kelly not want to go out with you then? I don't think so. So, you know, if you move your batters around because you got a hot hitter or you got a cold hitter, that's called managing. Get over the ego, move the guy, have the best chance to win the game. If he goes 4-for-4, bat him 3rd in game 5. But, you know, to me, in the playoffs, you got no room for ego. You got no room for any of that. This guy is swinging and missing at over half his at-bats. Drop him in the lineup.
Look, you brought up A-Rod's career history of struggling in the playoffs. Quite honestly, most of the Yankees struggle in the playoffs, and that's why they can't get over the Tigers. But, you know, before I throw it to Hank, we've got the Inside the Park Yankees fan on the line. Phil Thompson, you there?
I'm here, my man.
I don't know how much you heard, Phil, but we're talking about after two games, the New York media is ready to drop A-Rod from the number 3 hole. I say it's ludicrous to do that after two games when the whole squad is struggling at the plate. Mike seems to think you give it a shot if you're looking at being ousted from the playoffs. What do you think? Where are you at on A-Rod being moved?
Well, you know, man, I've been one of A-Rod's biggest supporters. You know, you and I go back and forth every fall, and I'm always protecting A-Rod, man. But is there a bigger waste of money in sports right now? I'm not sure if there is. When you look at how high this guy is on the salary list, one, his production over the last 2 or 3 years doesn't even merit all-star numbers. So I have moved to the side where you move him in the lineup where you think he needs to go. And you stop worrying about, well, we can't move him because he's A-Rod. Well, if Girardi keeps doing that, he's going to be without a job in another year or two of this, man. So I have no problem moving him. I've always struggled with the Yankees lineup. I mean, they're batting Granderson 7th tonight. You know, they bat Swisher 5. Big Tex is at 6 right now. I've always had trouble with this lineup. They've moved away since 09. So I say you move A-Rod lower in the order if, you know, if that's what Girardi feels like he would do. If he would make that move for anybody, you know, else, if their name wasn't Jeter or A-Rod, I think he needs to make the move.
You know, it's just, like you said, there's this A-Rod thing. It amazes me how Yankee fans and media treat this guy and how he still goes out there with a smile on his face. I was I caught the game where J.J. Hardy, I think this was game two. Yeah, game two. J.J. Hardy was coming from second on a base hit, and he actually stopped at third base. He could have scored, but he stopped at third because Derek Jeter looked like he was going to come up with a play. Ball was hit to the shortstop, and Jeter missed the ball. J.J. Hardy thought that he got it, and so he stopped at third. Did you guys see this?
Yeah.
It amazed me how they treated Derek Jeter on this play. They, oh, my gosh, J.J. Hardy held up. That was all Derek Jeter. He just knew Derek would be in the right place to make that play because Derek Jeter is always in the right spot to make the play. Nobody mentioned how A-Rod was on third and actually deked J.J. Hardy into thinking the throw was coming to him. A-Rod got on the base and held his glove out to make J.J. Hardy believe the ball was coming, and he held up. Nobody mentioned what A-Rod did. It was all, oh, he just had to know that Derek was going to make that play because that's what Jeter does. And as I'm saying this, they just showed a montage of Derek Jeter limping around the field. And I'm the TV's on mute, but I'm sure they were talking about how gutsy he is for playing while he's limping. But isn't there a little of this creeping into this? A-Rod needs to be dropped to the third. Isn't it a little bit of this, Hank? We just don't like A-Rod.
Oh, okay. Quit making great A-Rod sound like a choir boy, RJ. You're making him sound like the whole world is beating up on A-Rod. Look at what we're talking about over. First of all, look at his career numbers as a playoff player. Okay? He has not produced to what his paycheck is. Not at all. At all. Then he admitted to juicing. All right? And since that admission, he has come back and he has been a shell of the player that he once was. All right? He had all this drama going on with going to Boston. Oh, no, wait, I'm going to New York. And since he's been in New York, he has not been that player, okay? How many more series do Yankees fans have to look at where the final out is A-Rod swinging and missing, including this Detroit Tigers fan that's glad to see him bat in third, okay? So don't get it twisted. Now, Derek Jeter, this is apples and oranges. Of course you look for Derek Jeter to have made that place. Of course you're looking for – because what did Derek Jeter do? He produces. And at home plate, what did he do this year at 30-something years old? Oh, yeah. He led the league in hits. This is the kind of guy that you're talking about with Derek Jeter. He's a deke from A-Rod. A-Rod is A-Rod in name only. Okay? And you're absolutely right. At some point, everybody is going to say the emperor ain't got no clothes on. Keep him batting third if you want to.
Okay, I love it when Hank goes on these rants because it gives me time to go to Baseball Reference and do some research of my own. Mike, are you listening?
I am, and the interesting point that I think nobody's bringing up here, about 3 years ago, Penn State did a heavy recruiting trip into New York City around the same time that the story broke on A-Rod. I think Sandusky touched him. He's on the list. I see it in the memoir.
All right, let me jump in, fellas, because like I said, the media, and you said I treat A-Rod like a choir boy. I'm looking at the numbers, Hank.
Okay.
In one World Series, he's been in one World Series. He said he struggles in the playoffs.
That's
the World Series
that
he
year.
Was in. Pardon me?
That year he was all right. That year they won the World Series.
Okay, so I don't need to go into those stats because he was fine.
They was all good
count.
That year. The last best Yankee
okay.
team they had.
All right. He's been in 5 American League Championship Series. In those 5 series, the man who you guys say struggles in the playoffs hit .313. His on-base percentage was .432, and he slugged .615. Doesn't sound
RJ,
like
RJ, before you get to
me.
Would you please put up Josh Hamilton's numbers for this year and compare them and tell me how awesome Josh Hamilton was?
This is career.
Okay,
so that includes his Seattle years too, though, right?
It includes Seattle, New York. You know, I don't know how many American League Championship Series he was in Seattle. 1, 2. So the rest were with the Yankees. Out of the 5, 2 were in Seattle.
How many of that?
I mean, you can. It was
how
in
many
96 at that. 96.
Those numbers, you can make those numbers work for you any kind of way you want to. At crunch time, come on, the eyeball test,
hey,
all of it. You know that.
You said he struggles in the postseason. I'm telling this is exactly
okay.
what I'm talking about.
Okay,
the numbers don't say
I
that.
I can't believe this. You are taking up for A-Rod. This is beautiful.
I'm telling you guys that you guys are letting the media perception of Alex Rodriguez taint how you guys see him. I mean, it's right in front of me. He's hit .313 in the ALCS.
I'm letting you know what's tainting me, RJ? That third strike that Valverde threw to him last year, that third strike that Johnson threw to him the other night. Okay? That's what and the three strikeouts the night of the game too. That's what's tainting me, but I guess I'm blind.
But he's not the only Yankee that is striking out, Hank. Derek Jeter leads off.
Oh my God. Okay, what's his RBI since we're talking about his numbers in the playoffs?
So we're gonna look at RBI now?
Right on this one. The point is, I don't think that the New York media or any media is getting on A-Rod if he is producing at crunch time. Okay? And you cannot argue that he produces at crunch time in the playoffs. That's common knowledge to everybody. Bill just told you that. He watches more than I do.
I'm just looking at the numbers, fellas. I don't see what you guys are seeing, I guess.
Would you bat him third?
No, I said before I would hit Cano third.
Oh, okay. All right, then.
But I wouldn't talk about dropping someone that I trusted to be a third after two games. That seems a bit irrational to me.
Get third, batting third after two games.
Is he the only Yankee that's struggling, Phil?
Nah, the bats are struggling, and going into the playoffs, you know, my big concern was the pitching. You know, and Carrada is throwing well, Pettit threw well yesterday or in game two, and the bats aren't working. So no, A-Rod's not the only guy struggling, absolutely not.
So why is he the only one we're talking about moving?
Man, this is A-Rod bias, man. A-Rod just doesn't it's not fair. It's not right. It's almost like Barry Bonds a little bit. There's just something about his personality that it's not charismatic. It's not likable. It's not affable, as Larry David would say. There's just something about it.
And that's what I'm saying. And to your point, Hank, in these playoffs, Cano's batting .182. Swisher's hitting .222. So Ichiro's hitting .231. A-Rod's not the only issue here. If you can have damn, we can put Mickey Mantle third, and the Yankees are still struggling with the rest of this stuff. Granderson's hitting .100. You're not hearing about any of these guys.
I don't think any of those guys you mentioned making $100 million either.
It's not about how much you're making, Hank. It's about winning a ball game.
Okay. But if you bat in third and Alex, with all these numbers, there's a reason why. You're right. I think personality has to do with it. But I think perception as well that it's just too many times that you have seen where the Yankees has had something on the line with him being up and he simply has not produced. You can't say the same thing about Cano. You can't say the same thing about Granderson. You can't say the same thing about Jeter. And, yeah, they're struggling now. But you can't say that about them, you know, and the fact that they're right there all year. A-Rod hasn't been there. And if he doesn't produce, he's hurt. And he's always coming off injury. I think, like, you're right. It's a combination of all of those things.
Maybe we should just take A-Rod and boil him in a witch's hot bubbling thing and just make everything right in the world. Don't you say, Hank?
Hey, you know.
Put him in a big cauldron.
Yeah, a cauldron, yeah. It's Halloween.
Mike, you got anything else on this one?
I got to tell you, RJ, that in order to move A-Rod, you got to move a second player. So right there, someone else is getting moved. It didn't stop the Yankees from putting Ichiro at the two spot and leaving him there. But in the end, you got to win the games, right? So you got to spark the lineup. I don't know that the argument is necessary about A-Rod getting moved. As it is, you got to do something, okay? And that involves moving your number three hitter, trying to get some combination going, right? Some combination. So
indeed.
We focus on A-Rod, but you're right. No one in that lineup is moving, so no name should be off limits. No one's going, man, you can't move Granderson out of eighth spot. Man, that's just rude. No, you can't do that. So why do we say that about A-Rod? You know what? If I was hit number five for the New York Yankees, I'd be pretty proud of myself. I'd be just fine with that. Whatever it takes, Coach. What happened to that attitude? And maybe A-Rod has that. I don't know that we hear a lot about him saying, I won't bat third. But it's the playoffs. Whatever it takes to win. If you need me to bunt to get the guy over to third, Coach, okay, I'll do that. And if your manager, Girardi, won't have him do that, then you get rid of Girardi and you have a guy that's not afraid to make those.
Yes.
All right, all this fact-checking to prove you guys wrong made me miss the Tigers' run. Can anybody tell me how the Tigers scored?
They cheated.
As I hear Phil chuckling when Ibanez is rounding the base. Nice one, Phil.
Yes, sir.
We got a tie game in the Bronx. Phil, before we go, can you do some? Can you hang in for some predictions?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll start with the visitor first. Who you got in the ALCS?
Well, I like the Yankees. I don't have many facts to back it up, but I'm going to go with the Yanks. And I also like Detroit. I like Detroit in the ALCS. So I see those two teams there, and I actually see Detroit making it to the World Series. So I think Detroit has got too much. Yeah, it pains me to say it, but.
All right, Hank, ALCS, who you got and who's winning?
I like, of course, I'm going with the Tigers. But I'm going with Baltimore. I think that the Yankees are going to probably implode themselves after this year. And then I see the Tigers in a 7-game series going to the World Series.
So you flip-flopping. Last week you had the Yankees.
I had the Yankees beating Texas. But since Texas ain't there, I have to reshuffle, okay? And based upon what I've seen with the pitching and basically what I've seen in the first couple of games, I think the Yankees are starting to do that playoff swoon that they've done the last couple of years again. And I think this year they're doing it with the Orioles. And so I think the Tigers – as inconsistent as they've been, I think they're going to be consistent enough to get to the World Series.
All right. Mike, last week you had the Yankees and the Tigers in the ALCS. You sticking with that?
I am, but I have to say this because it's true, all right? Bottom of the ninth, one out, down by a run. A-Rod comes to play. No, benched Raul Ibanez. Pinch hit, home run. A-Rod, take a seat. Girardi got himself
a
set. How about
that,
guys?
Wow, he did pinch it for A-Rod. Wow.
and prepare for the media to hailstorm on A-Rod. Are we going to start calling for Ibanez to replace A-Rod in the lineup?
Oh, come on now. It's just the point that's being made here. he ain't getting it done.
It is. It was
you're
good.
Right, Hank.
You know what? Here's Ibanez. My prediction. I think that the Yankees get by Baltimore. I think Detroit gets by Oakland. And on the back of the hot bat of Alex Rodriguez, the Yankees win the ALCS in 5 games, go to the World Series.
Love it, man.
All right. I got
he's just trying to piss us off with RJ. That's all that
I
is.
I know it. I'm sticking with the Tigers and the Yankees. And, you know, it's postseason magic when the Tigers and the Yankees play, and the Tigers always win. So I got the Tigers in the World Series representing the American League. Now, we got a minute and 10 seconds left of the live show, so I do want to take some time to let you guys know. If you missed any episodes, please go to iTunes. Just do a quick search for Real Sports Guys, one word. You can catch all the back shows. You will also be able to hear the rest of this show. We're going to finish up with the NL predictions. You can hear that if you download the show on iTunes. Please do, because I'm sure Hank's got some more crazy picks for you, so make sure you check that out. And please come back next week where we will be digging into these playoffs even more, having a good time. So thanks for listening. Check you out next week. We're going to keep it moving with the National League predictions. Phil, who you got in the NLCS? You got Cincinnati going against the Giants, and you got
the Nationals and the Cardinals.
Well, I like the Cardinals, man, with their experience. So I'm going to take the Cardinals in that series. And I don't know. I mean, San Francisco looked pretty good tonight, so I'm going to go with them as well.
You know, Michael, they're showing his claws at you.
Like that after the Yankees. Man.
So you got the Cardinals and you got the and the Giants, right?
Yeah, the baseball Giants.
Who you got winning?
I'm going to go with the Cardinals, man. I'm going to go with the Cardinals. I think Beltran's going to be a star. And I like the two big guys that the Cardinals have on the front end of their rotation. So I like the Cardinals, man, to get back to the World Series.
All right. Beltran has been having the monster postseason. And he's another guy who gets a bad rep. A lot of people remember him for that striking out looking when he was with the Mets. But his postseason numbers are more than phenomenal. They're eye-popping. And he's doing it again this year.
Yep.
Mike, who you got in the NLCS?
I think it's going to be Washington and the Giants, and I'm taking Washington to go to the World Series.
Is this the reverse jinx?
It is. That's exactly what it is. Thank you.
I smell that one a mile away.
I can't pick them at this point. I can't do it.
Can't do it. And who you got? Nationals? I'm not even entertaining that one. Hey, who you got?
I'm not going against Aroldis Chapman. In the back end of that bullpen. I'm taking Cincinnati to finish off the Giants, and I'm taking the Cardinals to take out the young Nationals, okay? And all of that hell is going to be going on in Washington because Strasburg wasn't there. So you got the hated Cardinals, Mike, against your Cincinnati Reds. And I got to take the Reds because I got to take the inside of the park special with the Detroit Tigers and the Cincinnati Reds because I want that show to happen.
Yep.
I'm with you, Hank. I'm definitely with you. I see the Reds pulling this one out in five, and I see the Cardinals closing this one out. Tomorrow. I think, is Shelby Miller pitching for the Cardinals tomorrow?
Believe so.
Yeah, I believe so. And I know a lot of people have never probably heard of this guy. He's a stud. He was a rookie this year. I don't even know if he qualified to, if he got enough innings to qualify for rookie of the year. But he's a very well-touted prospect. If you got the time, definitely check this kid out. He can really throw. He's awesome. So I see the Cardinals closing it out. And then in the World Series, I'm going Red. Nothing I'm looking forward to more than getting the Great American Ballpark and taking the World Series game in with you, Mike. So I'm hoping the Reds can pull it out.
I do, too. You got the inside track to tickets, you let me know.
Will do, brother. So there you have it. That's another week of Inside the Park. We appreciate y'all for listening. We definitely appreciate Phil for jumping on in there, giving us his Yankee expertise, even though he did let out a cheer during the show. We frown upon that, Philip, but, you know, what can we do? Thank y'all for listening. Hey, Hank, take us home.
All right, folks, that's the ball game. Drive home safe.
Peace.